So this is The Change Show with Simon Phillips, and who better to have along than Judith Germain. Judith, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic, and how are you?
Oh, I couldn't be better, and I'm so excited about today's show because you and I have known each other just a few years, haven't we? In fact, I think I introduced you on a post today that said long-term collaborator. You notice I didn't say how long, and but also a real friend. So that's, I'm just delighted to be here with a friend today, helping me get the show on the road. Well, I've got a formal introduction. I suppose I better do that, hadn't I? Just for the listeners. The listeners at home who don't know you, Judith Germain is the leading authority, even on Maverick leadership. She's an author, a speaker, a consultant, a mentor, and a trainer. She's the founder of the Maverick Paradox, specializing in Maverick leadership and enabling individuals, business owners, and organizations to improve their impact and influence. So my very first question is, Jude, what are you doing in the afternoons?
Relaxing a little bit, strategizing probably is what I'm doing in the afternoons.
Excellent. So putting your feet up because you've done your job in the morning.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually my real first question is, why Mavericks? What led you down this path?
Well, so I've defined Mavericks as willfully independent people. Mm. And it was a complete surprise to myself to discover I was one. I don't know why somebody else had to point that out to me after a while of working with me. But I think I found that Mavericks are real game changers. They change and they impact so many people on so many circumstances. But if you're not harnessing that talent, that individual can destroy either people or situations. And I just think if you work with people who are Mavericks, you can make big change in the world. And I think that if more people could be effective Maverick leaders, then, you know, we could even save the world.
Cool. Just a small undertaking. So I guess now we know what you're doing in the afternoons. So you're saving the world in the afternoons and saving the Mavericks in the morning. So, although it doesn't sound like it's necessarily just the Mavericks that you're helping there. It's actually, as you say, harnessing that talent. And specifically in organizations where they probably are maybe underutilizing them or overlooking them. What's a typical organizational response then to these Mavericks?
Typically, an organization will be concerned with them because they will see them as troublesome talent. So the Mavericks, so the business tends to want to keep them because they're the high fee earners, customers love them, they're really great thinkers. But HR is a bit perplexed because if a Maverick isn't harnessed properly, then they'll cause all sorts of harassment issues and bullying issues and things like that. And I think for me, I'm really focused on effective Maverick leaders. So you don't actually need to be a Maverick to be a Maverick leader, because if you're a Maverick leader, you're working for the greater good. You are concerned about who you are. So you're highly principled, you know your value set. And it's about what you do. So you will work with integrity, you'll get things done, and you're the sort of person that will stand up and say, no, this isn't working, so let's do something different.
Okay, so this is The Change Show, and you've already said that the Mavericks are real game changers. What's the fascination with change from a Maverick's perspective?
Oh, it's oxygen. Mavericks and Maverick leaders are all about challenge. So they challenge themselves and they challenge the circumstances that are in. Steady state routine is like death. I mean, they can end up getting quite depressed actually if there's not enough change. So Maverick leaders are change eager. They look for the novel, but they want to change not for the sake of, oh, let's just change it, because that in itself doesn't make any sense to a Maverick. It's more about let's change it for the better.
Would it be fair to say you wouldn't expect a Maverick to stick around long if they find themselves in an organization that's pretty welded to the status quo?
Yeah, a socialized Maverick will work hard to shake it up. But if it's not, if the environment isn't going to change, then they'll take the talents elsewhere. And I think that's one of the things about organizations is right now, especially with the COVID pandemic that's still, you know, all around the world, you need people who are change eager, who are able to help align the organisations and people into it and to move to a new area, to a new thing that will work first time that you do it. So this is the time for maverick leadership. People need that ability to go, no, this isn't working, let's change. And I think people have been taught, leaders have been taught to work really well in static environments or environments where change is occasional.
Yeah.
And that kind of mindset isn't going to work now. Whereas mavericks have always loved constantly changing complex environments with many pieces that you've got to put together. And maverick leadership teaches other people to be able to do that as well. So the more people in an organisation that can live that way and succeed in that way, the organisation is better off.
Yeah, okay. So I my ears were pricked when you said socialised maverick. Is this a subspecies of maverick? Are there other there are other species wandering the planet?
There are. It's a really good question. So there are extreme mavericks. So socialised and extreme mavericks are similar in the sense that they have the same attributes and same capabilities, but an extreme maverick is all about them. So they're centered on themselves and they don't care how they impact on the world. And socialized mavericks are all about other people, themselves as well. It's not like they're not self-interested, but they will put aside their self-interest if it's for the greater good. Okay. So if you looked at, say, loyalty, so both types of mavericks favour loyalty, but the extreme maverick is all about loyalty to them. So they'll dump you when they need to. But socialised mavericks is, I'll be loyal to you and you'll be loyal to me, and that's what would work.
Is there such thing as a lazy maverick?
I don't think so, because mavericks get bored really easy if things aren't changing or things aren't succeeding. You know what? They can appear to be lazy, actually, by conformists, because they've done the work way faster than everybody else, and they might be just sitting there trying to innovate something new, so it looks like they're not doing anything. So, yeah, so maverick leaders will... people think they're argumentative, and often they're just quiet and thinking and listening until they're ready to speak, and that could look like disinterest, actually.
Okay, interesting. So, because the image I've got in my mind is that friend of, you know, that's always sitting there completely restless, and you know, eager to just get on with the next thing. But I guess what you're saying is it might not always spell out in body language. It could just be going on in their head.
Yeah, and they're eager to do the next thing if there's a strategy towards it. I mean, mavericks don't like doing things for the sake of doing things, because that is a waste of energy. It's got to be purposeful, it's got to be meaningful.
Okay, so purposeful and meaningful, they seem like two like critical components of their mindset. Any other aspects that we should be aware of?
It needs to be transparent and honest. If you lie to a maverick, you'll get away with it once. And that is it. If you've got an extreme maverick, you will not get away with it. Socialized maverick will just go, I remember that.
So
they favor that integrity piece, and I look at it as integrity in both ways of the word. So you've got that character thing, but you've also got that wholeness. So integrity in terms of like everything is holistically connected as well, and both parts of integrity is important to a socialized maverick or an effective maverick leader.
Yeah. So one of the things that I talk to people about with my Delta model of change, which I will come back to another time, is that leaders in a change environment, it's not about always leading from the front, but it's actually quite often, it's about clearing the way to make the change happen. What would be a maverick's interpretation of that? How would they go about clearing the way for others to make change happen?
Storytelling.
Okay.
So they would tell you the story. So they look at the strategic direction, and then they will convert it into a story that's engaging and aligning to the people that are listening. And then they will be encouraging and painting the whole picture. So I talk about pacing. So like, for example, I used to go into organisations and change the HR departments into a better functioning one. So I would pace the team. We're going to get to this point, you're going to feel like this, and then, but that's okay, that's totally normal, and then we're going to do that, and then this is what's going to happen next. So people have the milestones. So when they reach those points, they go, oh yeah, this is the bit that where I'm going to feel rubbish because it's I don't know any of this new stuff. But that's okay because I know I'm going to feel rubbish and the good bit is just over there.
Yeah.
Does that answer the question? I'm not sure if it does.
Yeah, I don't know. I forgot what the question was now. No, I'm only kidding. No, that's great. And I think in a way, it's almost like helping people get comfortable with the change. Because even the bits that are not so great, you've already flagged up that that's going to happen as the maverick, if you like. And you've so when it does happen, it's less of a big impact. It's actually just something that we can get on board with.
And it's fun. So you're looking for where the fun is. Because there's always something fun about learning something that's new or doing something that's different. And that's what gets the maverick leaders excited, because there's always new fun to find out. But that's unusual. so you get to the point where you get a group of individuals change eager. So they get very excited about the new change. And then it makes it really easy because everyone's like, oh, this has got to happen. But that's okay, because we're going to do this. And you're like, yay.
Okay, so let's finish off this bit then with something that might help the listener identify a maverick in a crowd.
Okay, they're the ones that are asking the most insightful questions, who will not stop until the very last why has been answered. And you can tell them differently from the person who's a pain, is because the maverick leader will be an acknowledged expert in what they're doing. So the questions come from not trying to be a pain and show off that they know stuff. It comes from, let's help solve this issue.
Ah, brilliant. Great. Well, I'm looking forward to coming back after the break, Judith, and trying to understand just what it is you think you're doing supporting all of these mavericks. So welcome back to The Change Show with Simon Phillips. I'm joined by Judith Germain, author of, I've just found out that your book has two titles, author of The Maverick Paradox, or if you wish to call it this, The Secret Power Behind Successful Leaders. I think you're just being greedy and saying, I want a book with two titles. Come on, why two titles?
I named it twice.
Yeah, exactly. Why two titles?
Well, I think when I was writing it, and it comes a lot from the work where people were saying, you really need to write a book about this. And like it was said so many times, I was like, okay, I'll write a book about this, was there is a maverick paradox. And the paradox is that you tend to call in the mavericks almost as a last resort, like only you can fix it. And then when it gets fixed quickly and well, then people end up hating the maverick for doing it, because that's not what they wanted them to take a longer time. You know what I mean? So it's a bit of a paradox. And it's also a really good template on how to be a successful leader, because maverick leaders who are effective, I think, really are the best type of leaders, because they are more change eager. It's about who they are and what they do. And if you think about leadership generally, it's always been about the environment that people are in. So if you think of any type of leadership style, situational leadership, excellent leadership, whatever, it's all been based on that environment. And then when you move past that environment, it no longer works, which is ridiculous. I mean, if you think that organizations today are still using situational leadership as the dominant style of leadership, which was in the 1960s. So like not much has changed since then, obviously. Whereas maverick leadership is built for now and the future, because who you are, what kind of character you are you trusted or trustworthy? What do you do? I know, are you competent? How do you do the things and decisions that you make is always going to be relevant, whether in a static environment or a complex changing environment. So, yeah, you'll grow with it.
I'm fed up now. I thought I was going to be qualifying as a maverick leader, and then you mentioned that you have to be competent. I mean, okay, tell me about the work. How do you support maverick leaders?
It's a really good question. It's a good question because I'm a bit of a bespoker, i.e. I look at how to improve the leadership impact and the influence of an individual or an organization. And I do it by being really good at strategizing, innovating, executing, and helping others do that. So that might look like a leadership team, well, a leadership group of individuals that aren't really a team or working well together, and they don't know how to do their, how to impact others, and not trusted by the teams, and they don't think in a strategic or senior level. So I might work with them via training, mentoring. I always kind of look at it as I've got this huge toolbox, and I'm just kind of looking through the various tools and going, this will work if I add this to it, and then that would work. So I tend to, what is the problem that you're facing right now? Okay, what is the hidden thing? So I ask a lot of questions, and then I will design something for that organization straight away that would solve the problem and the hidden problem that they don't really discuss.
And in that context then, is the maverick always perceived as the problem, or the situation is problematic and the mavericks can fix it? What's the maverick leadership perspective on, you know, that sort of starting point for clients?
Sometimes the organization doesn't have any mavericks or any maverick thinking, so they are stuck doing what they've done before. They've not able to change quickly enough, and change not just in process but in the alignment with the individuals as well. So for example, with some of the programs I put together under maverick leadership, I've been asked to add a strategic thinking element, which is what I think is really interesting, because a lot of people can strategically plan but not strategically think. So they might have an idea and they start to plan how to implement that idea, but that's not strategic thinking. That's not looking at it afresh. That's not looking at where that might fit in or what could come next. So a maverick leadership program could typically include strategic thinking or the ability to innovate. And all the research shows that one of the things that leaders don't do is they don't execute. So people can get really, really excited about the great idea and what it would look like, but they never implement it. Mm-hmm. Or if they implement it, they don't implement it well. Or when they implement it, it doesn't solve the problem that they want to do. So maverick leadership looks at making sure that whatever you're implementing actually solves the stated problem and the what others might see as unforeseen consequences. So if you're going to do this, how does it affect why? How does it affect the people? How does it affect the operation? How does it affect all this? And all that stuff needs to be done first before you even start working on it.
Fascinating. Would you expect to see your maverick leaders all over that continuum from strategy through innovation and execution?
I would like to see maverick leaders in the entire organization, because I think if you've got an individual, it doesn't matter where they sit, whether they're a leader by title or whether they are someone who is cleaning the room or doing the canteen or some knowledge worker, if that individual has high integrity, is value driven, cares about the greater good and helping you to meet your mission, then you are a better organization and it's a better engaging workplace. So I think one of the things about maverick leaders is that they see everyone as a peer. They don't have a hierarchy, like I treat you better because you're director and I treat you less because you're not. There's no sarcasm or talking down to people. Is I see you as my peer, therefore I treat you in the same way. And I think when you have an environment where every individual sees themselves as equal as everybody else, can you imagine the ideas? And also, if people are engaged and excited to be there and they trust the people that they're following, then when you are doing change, you're not held back by people going, what's the hidden agenda? I'm not sure I really believe what they're doing. They're just like, yeah, where are we going? Oh yeah, I'm coming.
So it sounds like maverick leadership is also bringing in a new way of thinking about our organizations. So far, have you encountered any organizations that are taking this concept of maverick leadership on and redesigning their structures? Because a lot of organizations, even today, are very hierarchical. So are you breaking that down?
Yeah, it's, you know what, I had one of those funny moments where you're doing something and you meet another maverick who takes your idea and makes it way better. And I saw it live and it happened in a training room and it was fantastic. So in my book, I talk about the attributes of mavericks. Yeah. So they, you know, like willful intention, honest belief. Anyway, so I was going for the training and this maverick leader who's running the organization, CEO, went, I can run my business based on this. I can be structured around this. Can we do this exercise as if I'm restructuring the business? And I was like, interesting. Let's see what happens with that. Yeah, let's just do that. I completely restructured. And it was fascinating to see. And also, it made perfect sense. And I was just like, wow. And I think that's what Maverick Leadership is, I think. It's not going, no, it's mine. And this is my idea. It can only work in this way. He's looked at it and said, if I can get my organisation to, when they deal with their client, to be willfully intended and have an honest belief and they can influence them, this will make my company better. So he took the attributes of a maverick and said, this is how we're going to run our business. I love it.
Yeah, there's no, what's there not to like?
What's there not to like?
Exactly. It's one of the, it's not criticisms, but it's one of the things that people say to me when I'm talking to them about building change capability inside their organizations because of all the benefits that will come from that. People often say, but there are parts of my business where I don't want change. I actually want things to be routine. I want things to be structured. I want them to be coordinated and organized in a way that is just business as usual, because without that business as usual, I'm not making profits, etc., etc. So given that your maverick leaders are people that thrive on change and are restless when things aren't being, you know, from micro improvements through to global, you know, global upheaval, what sort of concerns do your leadership clients have when you start talking to them about maverick leadership?
I think initially there might be a concern that you're going to say everything that you're doing is rubbish and here's a new method of working, which doesn't really make any sense because nobody runs a rubbish organization all the way through. It's just not possible. And I think if you think from a maverick leader's perspective, the first point is strategize. So what's the strategy? What needs to happen? And the next is innovate. So it might be, here's a process or a part of the organization that's working really well, making loads of money. Brilliant. Does it still do what the strategic direction is? If it doesn't, does it need to change or direction needs to change? Or what kind of innovation? And the innovation may be quite small. So what kind of innovation needs to happen to move forward? And does it still need to execute in the way it does? And I think sometimes just looking at something, you can innovate something much more interesting and much more useful without actually changing the whole thing. So again, it goes back to what we said before, it's not about change for the sake of change. And I think mavericks are listless if they see that things aren't working and it's staying the same. That's where the listlessness comes from. They're not an individual that says, I just need to have something new all the time because that makes me excited. No, mavericks like change because it's better than what is there, not because it's just change. Because why change for the sake of changing? That's a waste of energy, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything else that you do to support maverick leaders, or is there something that you'd recommend they do for themselves?
Oh wow. The most important thing I think is to be curious and to be always looking at something and seeing what could be different and following things that may not appear to be logical. So the great way to innovate is to see one thing here, if you changed it or put it somewhere else, what does the change make? And I help that curiosity in a number of ways. So I have the Maverick Paradox magazine, which is written by a swagger. So I've got a collective noun for socialized mavericks, which I call a swagger. So there's a swagger of mavericks that write for it, and it looks at all different aspects of business from a maverick perspective. I have the podcast as well. So everything's called Maverick Paradox, the Maverick Paradox podcast. And I have my own radio show, KLDR. And I think what you can do for yourself is to remain curious, question everything. There's nothing great about being compliant for the sake of being compliant. You need to be saying, does this work for me? Does it fit my values? Does it fit my principles? Is it working for the greater good?
Magic. I love two things about that. One is, you call it the Maverick Paradox everywhere to keep it simple, which means that I can understand it. And the other thing I really love is this idea of, you know, the thing that you're recommending to your Maverick leaders out there is just to learn how to swagger. So, you know, on that point, I'm going to say, let's go into another break and we'll come right back. And I'm going to ask you how you've dealt with a specific significant change in your life. Welcome back to The Change Show with Simon Phillips and my special guest, Judith Germain. We are here talking all about maverick leadership with the world's foremost expert on Maverick leaders. That is Judith Germain. In fact, I do believe your podcast has just crept into the top 10% podcast in the world. Am I right?
Yeah.
Ah, amazing. And I know you've been working at it for a few years, so it's a huge achievement. So big a round of applause from everybody here at The Change Show. Oh, no, it's just me, sorry. So tell me about a significant change in your life, because this is The Change Show, and I want to help people not only thrive on change, but also deal with the changes that happen in our lives. And I think who better to ask than the experts, the people who are out there supporting people in the world and making change happen. So Judith Germain, dum, 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 dum. Tell me about a significant change in your life.
Okay, I would say coming out of corporate and then working for myself is a significant change. And I think it came from, I've been a senior manager since age of 24 in HR. So I'd been doing it for a while, and I was noticing that the things that I was doing was becoming easier and easier and easier. So I'd go to another company and it would take less time to fix it, because I always came in to fix the problems. Yeah. And it got to the point where it was like 6 months to do this radical change that might have taken me 2 years in the past. And I was always feeling underutilized, because it was that whole Maverick paradox thing we said from before, where you're given this significant task, you're given all these resources, you can go in, you've got all this autonomy, you fix the problem, and then the organization claws back all the autonomy and claws back all the access. And then you're left with this very narrow thing that you didn't expect to be doing because you were sold this big thing.
Yeah.
So I was getting very disillusioned, and I guess I was getting really low, because I was like working at 20% of capacity and everyone was saying it was great and it was just killing me. And I also noticed that I really enjoyed working with those difficult, challenging people and there just wasn't enough of them. So I decided to work for myself, and it was much harder than I expected. I think when you become senior manager for a long time, that you expect that when you have something to say, people are listening. And of course, then you go into this environment as a SME amongst other SMEs, and you say stuff and no one's listening. And it was a real culture shock.
So SMEs, that's our small to medium-sized enterprises, isn't it? So
that's right. Sorry, I should have been clearer. And
yeah, that's all right. I just wanted to interject there, because quite often for people, a significant change is something that has been forced upon them. And although this was your decision, it felt like the way you expressed it, as it was forced upon you in a way that you didn't feel like you had a choice.
Oh, wow. What an insight. I had never thought of that before. But you are right. Because I never thought I'd work for myself. It sounded like a crazy idea. That was just stupid. Mm. You know, I had this kind of, start here. I was in my second career and I'd end up at this point. Yeah. And I ended up at that point probably too soon in a way. So I always had that, you're too young, oh, you're doing it anyway. And it became an integrity thing as well. I think the more senior that you become, you're more likely to see the mismatches between what an organisation says it does and what it actually does. And if you're an organisation that you cannot square that off, then it starts to be impinging on your principles and your values.
Okay, so we're in a situation where you don't feel like you've got much of a choice. You're now out in the marketplace, if you like, as a sole trader at the local market stall. I'm guessing that was your first business. No, come on, tell me. So how did you actually deal with all that? Because that's the bit that I want, I'm sure the listeners...
Well, to be honest, I was really lost, because no one was paying attention to me, which had been years since, I think that probably was last time, that was about 15. So I couldn't understand why no one... And also people kept assuming I didn't know what I was talking about, which is really irritating. I'm a maverick of me. What do you mean I don't know what I'm talking about? So people always wanted to know if I wanted to practice. Do you want to practice with me? Or do you want to do this? It's like, no, I want you to pay me. And like most people that start out on their own, you're good at what you do, but you don't have a clue on marketing and finance and all the other bits of running the business. And if you're used to being very competent, it's really soul destroying to discover that not only do you not know what you're doing, but you don't know where to go to get the help either.
Yeah.
With the pressure of, actually, you need to earn some money because there is nobody else giving it to you. It's a bit like dating from a female perspective. When you don't have a boyfriend, but you want a boyfriend, it's like you've got a neon sign that says, I want a boyfriend, and nobody wants to talk to you. But yeah. Then when you have a boyfriend and you're all excited and happy, then all the guys come out and want to talk to you. You're like, but like, where were you 6 months ago? Well, I didn't have anybody. And it's a bit like that when you're running your business. It's like you're desperate for work and people can see that and they don't want to buy. So it was really significant because for the first time, I felt like I really didn't know what to do. And I second-guessed myself, which is, again, something my religions don't really do. So it was really uncomfortable because I was like, did I do the right thing? Should I just get a job? And I don't want to get a job, but...
next question then is, what do you do when you don't know what to do?
So it's going to sound like I just repeat myself. I developed a strategy of finding out, which was I went to people that I could see were very well connected.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted them to have a one-to-one with them to get to know them and to ask them questions. And I had a strategy of I would ask nothing from no one, but I would be ever present and ever able to help. So I quickly developed a reputation for helping people, not asking for things and just providing advice and whatever. You know, I used to say, I don't have anything, but I have time. So if you want to run that by me. And asking, I guess I found people to model. That's what I did. I found people to model and I modeled the stuff I didn't know. So there was somebody who was a great soft seller. So I learned from him how to do soft selling. And I learned from somebody else to do marketing. I learned all up front, nothing, you know, underhand. But I went for the people that I could see were experts in their fields and asked them to help me model and modeled what they did. And then, also having people around me who weren't employed, because I found that when you talk to your employed friends, they were like, just go and get a job. You'll earn more money. It's like, I don't want a job. But that was always the solution.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're hanging around people that you want to be like, then they've been through the low times. So they can say, it will get better because you're good at what you do. And you will make some money at some point. Keep plugging away.
It's amazing how attractive the status quo suddenly becomes, isn't it? Where the status quo is the thing you're trying to change and the thing you're trying to get away from when things get difficult. And it's like, how clear is your vision in your case? How good is your strategy that's going to get you out of the problem? Magic. Well, go on. And sorry, anything else to say there?
Yeah, I was just going to say is to be open for help. I think when used to being leading thousands of people, to then turn around and go to somebody, I actually need help. It's really hard. So I think I had to learn, and this was a really tough thing for Maverick. I had to learn how to be vulnerable. I had to be vulnerable a lot, and that was very hard. And the reason I had to be vulnerable was because people couldn't see me, because I'd been in role for so many years that I still had a role, so they couldn't connect with me. So I had to become vulnerable and open up about myself for people to connect with me. That was difficult. That was really hard.
I think that's an amazing insight for people who are trying to enable personal change, because the whole point of it is you don't know how to exist in this new space.
Yeah.
And so that must incite a level of vulnerability because it's something you haven't done before. So if you can expose that with people that maybe can help you and throw out an arm and help you, you know, get across the chasm, if you like, then that's going to happen. But as you say, if you don't, then you're just going to be stuck looking like you're completely competent and actually not being able to move forward. Thanks for that. So that was it. That was The Change Show with Simon Phillips and my special, really special guest this week, Judith Germain. Thank you, Judith. It was great having you on the show, and I look forward to getting you back again, and we'll keep this conversation going.
Cool. I've loved it so much. Thank you.
Pleasure. Take care. Have a great week. We will see you next week on The Change Show with Simon Phillips.